Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, how's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy, but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today to get 10% off your first month.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, September the 1st, 2024, as I always look out the window. And today in the program, we'll discuss the Bash in Berlin, setting another WWE arena gate record, the most money ever extracted from the wrestling fans for a single non-stadium event last night in Germany. We'll touch on some comments. We'll play the comment from Cody Rhodes responding to questions about the Netflix documentary and the allegations of sexual misconduct from Janelle Grant. And we will go through a lot of questions today. Something like 9 or 10 questions I got that we will go through. But first, we will discuss, we will go through, since it's the beginning of the month, and you're listening for free this week, we will go through an update on the state of consumer metrics for AEW. Yes, we'll do AEW first, because that's where the biggest medical emergency always is around AEW. And we will go through WWE. The long and short of it is, AEW media rights value, we'll touch on rankings, seem to be okay. But AEW, mostly down. Mostly down. WWE, mostly up. Now we'll go into too much detail to explain to you why and to justify why I'm saying these things. First of all, let's look at total viewership. Don't worry, we'll look at the demo too. Total viewership in the recently completed month of August, even accounting for, yes, the Nielsen correction. And we're going to go in depth on the Nielsen correction here today too, because we have a question about that much later. But we will go into some depth on that. And we have total viewership in August, down 22%. Now, what about the cord cutting? Cord cutting, rule of thumb for now. It'll change over time. But rule of thumb, cord cutting, 9%. This, 22%. And you can see this, the streak is alive for AEW in every comparison to the same week of the prior year in terms of total viewership, negative comp every single week of this year so far, indicated by all the red arrows that you see here throughout the year to date. We got some close calls here that if you wanted to say, well, what if not for cord cutting, they would be up. Okay. But we got 22% in August, 19% down in July, 23% down in June. But what about the demo? Okay. The demo is about the same. The demo for August is down 27%. The form of measurement that matters to advertisers, the form of measurement that WBD has told AEW that you have to focus on, that or 25 to 54, as opposed to 18 to 49, highly correlated. And we have most weeks down from the same week of the prior year, with the exception of what looks like 1, 2, 3, 4. Again, down 27%. If not for cord cutting, it'd be, you could say my rule of thumb for cord cutting is let's adjust it by 9%. You're still down by double digits, even if you give Dynamite a 9% gimme here. You might say, well, wait a minute. The demo is even suffering more attrition than people of all ages, because younger people tend to watch even less, and they're bleeding even more from the typical traditional cable bundle. I don't know. What do you want to do here? Let's double it to 18%. That's probably not right. But let's double it to 18%. Well, you're still down by 27%, reflective of a genuine decline in the popularity of this show. But what about the other shows? Let's look at the other shows. Collision. We're several weeks now into year-over-year comparisons that we can possibly make for Collision, and they're all negative. The same week of the prior year, down 16% in August, down 36% in July. June is a partial month, but it's also down. Of course, Collision started out really strongly with its opening episodes, as all of these programs tend to do at the very beginning, due to wanting to start this thing off hot with the return of CM Punk in this case. In the case of Rampage, the debut of CM Punk. In any case, this is all down, and it's down worse than the rate of cord cutting. 16%. Again, versus 9, 16% is worse. Okay, what about the demo? The demo is down 20% in August. Every comp of the same week is negative. We are getting into the period where Collision in the year-over-year comparisons last year, by August, by September, it's starting to go against college football. College football is starting up again now. So we're getting into more of a post-CM Punk era now, right? Punk's been gone from the company for almost exactly 1 year. I think the 1 year, the first year anniversary of that is coming up in a few days. So we'll be able to look at, if you wanted to think about it that way, you want to say, well, it's not really a fair comparison because we're talking about the Collision with Punk versus the Collision without Punk. We're coming up on that time now, in this month of September. Nonetheless, okay, this show is viewed less, and it's viewed less in a way to a negative extent that cannot be explained solely by cord cutting. What about Rampage? Rampage. In the month of August, down 37%, the worst of these three AEW programs. We do have a couple weeks here, though, year to date, where it did better in the week of the same week the prior year. In any case, it's largely negative. And what about the demo for Rampage? It's largely negative. It's down 32% again. Pretty strong negative comp here. A couple weeks year to date where it did better this year than last year, but overall, negative 32%. All of these shows, then, whether we're focusing on total viewership, which may be more related to carriage fees, whether we're focusing on ad demographics, negative comparisons, the extent to which, I should just say this over and over again, the extent to which cannot be explained away solely with cord cutting, which I would say is 9%. All of these are more negative than negative 9%. Okay, what about the ranking? The ranking is really the important thing. I'll try not to go into too much detail here because we have a question that I want to get to this subject again with. But if you look at Dynamite over these 3 months, we got some issues here in terms of data consistency. Don't you hate when you have data consistency issues? In any case, Programming Insider has been reporting primetime rankings primetime data, viewership data for since June, since Spoiler TV basically has stopped getting that data, apparently. In any case, we see stability here in terms of the rank. Dynamite is averaging in the last 3 months number four in primetime in the demo on its night. Collision, 5, 11, and 12 over the last 3 months. Rampage, 6, 6, and 17. Oh, that does look weaker in August. Probably a lot of Olympics in there. Okay. And we'll touch on WWE stuff when we get to it. What about attendance? Well, attendance is not great. Where do we want to go with this? In August, Dynamite averaged 3,100. Estimated tickets distributed, of course, we're relying on WrestleTix data here. WrestleTix analysis of the ticket maps. 3,100 is what we got here. And as I pull up something off screen to look at where we're going here, it's down from, let's see, if we looked at the same, I don't know if I can actually look at this. It looks like it was 4,600 in the same month of the prior year. But I know what you're thinking. That's not fair because you're probably not looking at the same markets. And you're probably not. Luckily, we have this table out here where I look at, okay, they went to Champaign, Illinois for Dynamite. What was the tickets distributed? As we know, this Champaign, Illinois show did just over 2,000 tickets distributed. It's one of the least attended Dynamites ever. But what did Dynamite do when it was in Champaign, Illinois for Dynamite the last time? The last time it did something like 4,000. So we've got this Champaign, Illinois Dynamite doing 50% lower, doing half the house of the previous Champaign, Illinois Dynamite. We have All In, of course, which is down 36% from the prior All In. Put that aside as maybe there was some novelty effect, and surely there was some novelty effect there, and a hotter AEW product. Okay, Norfolk Dynamite, also in August, down 6% from the last time Dynamite was in Norfolk. And we go further back in time, we're going to beyond the last month, but we look at Nashville. Nashville Dynamite was up 8% from the prior Dynamite. We have Chicago, Illinois on July 3rd was up 4%. But then we go, you know, a number of Dynamites going all the way back into April that are just negative and even further back. We've got very few year to date. We have very few positive stories to tell about a Dynamite in a given city that did an attendance that was higher, at least an estimated tickets distributed that was higher than the same city's prior Dynamite. In Buffalo, down 26%. In Inglewood, California, down 42%. In Las Vegas, the Double or Nothing was down 19% from the prior Double or Nothing. Going back to Dynamite, Edmonton down 20%. Winnipeg down 27%. Jacksonville down 32%. Indianapolis flat. Charleston, West Virginia down 18%. I could go on and on here, but it probably doesn't make for good audio. You can see it for yourself if you're watching the video. Okay. Broadly negative stories to tell. You did draw 50,000 people to Wembley Stadium. That's a huge crowd. And that's unprecedented pre-AEW for many, many years. If we're talking about companies outside of WWE, in the Western market, okay? That's an achievement. But these numbers, in terms of a comparison, in terms of telling us where AEW's fan popularity is trending, which is different from its financial outlook, which is different from its media rights value outlook, fan popularity is absolutely in a negative direction. That's all I have to say about AEW for now. We will move on to World Wrestling Entertainment LLC, formerly known as World Wrestling Entertainment Inc., formerly known as World Wrestling Federation Entertainment, formerly known as Titan Sports. Raw, in this month of August, it is now complete. Raw, despite cord cutting, despite all the economic challenges, despite inflation, despite consumer sentiment index, Raw is up 3% in total viewership in August versus last year. What about the demo? Raw is up 6% in the demo in August. It was also up in July by 10%, despite all of these headwinds. Despite AEW fans still hating WWE, some of them. What about SmackDown? SmackDown, down 3%. Down 3%. Is that significant? At minimum, it is not very significant. Okay. The demo, though, down 2%, pretty close to flat. As we can see here, year-to-date for SmackDown, most of these year-over-year comparisons in the same week are green, which means they are positive comparisons in this year versus last year, despite the fact that fewer people are probably watching Fox generally or have access to it through a traditional cable system, even though I know it's not broadcast. Not that many people use over-the-air antennas, except for weirdos like me. Netflix, NXT, the show that was almost on Netflix. Have you read the aggregator headlines, according to Mark Shapiro? Anyway, NXT finally plateauing here after many, many months of positive year-over-year comparisons. As you can see here, year-to-date, most of these comparisons in the week versus the same week of the prior year are positive. NXT continues to, NXT is plateauing, as I said. But throughout the year-to-date, up until the summer, these were, strong year-over-year comparisons. But now we are seeing some negative and some flat comparisons, down 11% in total viewership in August. I suppose if you wanted to point to an excuse, you could say, well, it was going against the Olympics. Preemptions are excluded here, so we are not including the numbers where it was on Sci-Fi. In any case, what about the demo? Okay, let's look at the demo. What does the demo say? Down 15%. Similar story there. We are seeing a much stronger still NXT than in the gray line here of 2022, still well above that, but we are seeing a plateauing here now, finally, of NXT as it is poised to move to the CW in early October, where I understand the first episode of NXT is going to go against the vice presidential debate. Vice presidential debate date, October 1st, yes. So I think that debut on CW is going to go against the vice presidential debate, if that matters. Okay, and the rankings for, we're not going to look at SmackDown because I pulled this data quickly from Programming Insider, which does report broadcast, but I don't have broadcast ready to break out here. But let's look at just NXT, who is ranking number 2 in June, number 4 in July, number 5 in August. If you're in the top 10, you're probably providing a great deal of value to your network home. Let's look at Raw here. Raw, to explain why I've marked up the Raw row, Raw is, as everyone knows, is reported in three different telecasts every Monday, the first hour, the second hour, and the third hour, basically to adjust the ranking. You just subtract one. Trust me, I've done this before. So in essence, Raw is ranked in June, number 1. This is, again, among cable primetime in the 18 to 49 demo. In June, it was number 1. In July, it was number 2. In August, it was number 2, for an average of number 2. These are averages, by the way. So Raw ranking really strongly. NXT, for being NXT, ranking pretty strongly. And I can tell you, SmackDown is ranking number 1 on broadcast and primetime almost every week when the Olympics are not on. Okay, what about attendance, though? Is that attendance for WWE finally declining? Is it the honeymoon period is over for WWE? They're going to start just nosediving soon, right? No, we don't see that yet. SmackDown average 12,200 in August. Raw averaged 11,400 in August. Domestic house shows averaged 4,500 in August. These are, if we look at the August of the prior year, Raw might be higher. I think Raw is this 9,400 number in August. SmackDown is this 10,800 this year. They're both higher. The house shows do look like they're higher. But let's look at market to market. I bet when they go back to those markets, though, people are sick of this WWE product already. They're getting tired of it eventually. It doesn't feel as hot as it used to. Let's look. In Stuttgart, Germany, where they just went on Wednesday, up 9% from the last house show they did in Stuttgart, Germany. What about Providence, Rhode Island, that Raw that they did there? It's up 17%. SmackDown in Washington, D.C., up 2%. House show in Estero, Florida, flat. SmackDown in Orlando, up 15%. Tulsa, Oklahoma, nosedives by 1%. Baltimore, Maryland, Raw, up 8%. Cleveland, Ohio, SmackDown, flat. That must have been before SummerSlam, which I believe did $1 million gate. I think I have that information through Polestar. I've said I better confirm that now. Polestar, Cleveland. As I look at my messages from, and looks like WrestleTix has reported this as well. Not quite $1 million. I apologize. $958,846 was the gate for the post. This is What am I looking at? The second. Yeah, this is for the pre-SummerSlam SmackDown, which was flat. They have it as tickets sold 9,949. In any case, moving on to the St. Paul Raw, which is at the end of July, up 68%. Anyway, the list goes on and on. We've got very few cases. We have some cases where it's down by a single digit, like this Boston Raw back in July 1st. We've got some flat cases of, you know, the Ottawa Raw. We've got another single digit negative case of the Rosemont Horizon SmackDown in June. But overwhelmingly, these are, in some cases, really strong double digit increases or more moderate increases. And that's just going back to May 10th. If we continue to go back and look at these as WWE returns, and again, these are comparisons against the very same event. It's a given city, the last time it had Raw there, or the given city, the last time it had SmackDown there, or the given city, the last time it had a house show there. And overwhelmingly, with a few exceptions, positive comparisons in estimated tickets distributed. WWE's business, WWE's popularity. Both of these companies' businesses are fairly strong. WWE's business is really strong. AEW's fan-driven business is not that strong, but its business partner business is still, when it comes to being a TV property, probably still pretty safe. So that's the state of wrestling popularity. To touch on Bash in Berlin, which was held at the Uber Arena in Berlin, Germany. Yes, that's what they really call it. According to WrestleTix, yesterday had an estimated 13,300 plus tickets distributed. Michael Cole, who must be a big fan of WrestleTix, actually announced a lower number of 13,000, slightly lower number, 13,149 on the broadcast. I don't think there is a final count yet from WrestleTix. I'll check my inbox. I don't see one. But WWE did announce that this was the biggest arena gate in WWE history. So it's probably the biggest arena gate in all of pro wrestling history. Anyway, what does that mean? It means it's somewhere well over $3 million in US dollars, because the last record that we knew of, this record was set at Money in the Bank in London last year, where they sold $3.3 million US dollars worth of tickets. So for this to break the record, I understand Backlash in Lyon, France also broke the record. We don't know what that number was, but it was higher than this number of 3.3 million. And then according to WWE, Bash in Berlin broke the record again. So somewhere well over 3.3 million. That is the number to beat. Adjusting for inflation, I'd have to check. WrestleMania 4 or 5 might hold the record. I think 5. 5, the last time I checked. Adjusting for inflation still holds the record. But in terms of real-time dollars, that's what it is. 3.3 million and somewhere greater than this number for this show. And I'll take a drink of water and we'll listen to Cody Rhodes in the post-show press conference being asked about the Janelle Grant allegations and the Netflix documentary on Vince McMahon that is set to release.
Hi, Cody. Tilo from...
Hello.
Young Money. Since you mentioned Netflix, I don't know if you saw the announcement of the Netflix stuff on Vince. Mm-hmm. Are you gonna watch it? And are you familiar with the Janelle Grant story? Do you personally believe what she's saying? And does the locker room believe it? Because the locker room has been awfully silent on this whole issue. You know, the allegations about sex trafficking and rape.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. In terms of, am I going to watch it? Not to sound cheeky by any means, I am deep in a Game of Thrones rewatch, and that is a hell of a lot of commitment. I don't know. I think there's a bit of misinformation in terms of WWE has no involvement in this documentary, as far as I know. I imagine I would get around to seeing it. In terms of the more serious and the meat in your question, in terms of the locker room being quiet or silent, whatever it may be, I don't think that's a matter of belief versus non-belief. I think it's strictly speaking, we want to be doing what we were doing out there, and the focus and attention that it takes, you know, 13,149 people to have a great story and have a great match and do that every single night has left most of us where we're finding the information out just as you are. And that includes the resolution of this information in terms of what happened, how it happened, and how justice comes about, whatever it may be. But I wouldn't look at it as an active attempt from the locker room to be silent in the attempt. We just are doing what we do day to day, WWE business. I'm sorry?
Do you believe Janelle Grand?
Oh, I don't know enough about the information to give you a good enough answer there. I'm sorry.
All right, one last question.
So there's Cody Rhodes speaking yesterday at the Bash in Berlin post show. And by the way, this is we'll get into questions and answers in a moment. This program is free for everyone. WrestleNomics Radio is what you're listening to now, station identification. This is free for everybody on the first Sunday of each month. Otherwise, on Sundays, it is for subscribers only at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. The questions we'll be reading here, I believe, completely are from our subscribers at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. If you want to get access to everything that's reported on the Patreon, including my show reports, TV ratings reports, which include not just TV ratings, but analysis of attendance via WrestleTicks data of the YouTube videos and how those ranked for the given show that we're reporting on. Oh, we put the cage match info at the very bottom, too, if you're interested in how the match is rated and how the event rated. So all of that is there behind the paywall for everybody at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. You can also get access to the big data on the data tier if you really want to dive into the spreadsheets. So we will begin questions and answers. Will there be answers? Will I dodge the questions? Will I pivot quickly into talking about how great this show is? We'll see. First question is from Juan. Juan asks, hi, Brandon. I'd love your perspective on Rhea Ripley being a draw. I see with Google Trends, she tends to rank higher than most active wrestlers. At Fanatics Fest NYC, she was the second person to sell out her meet and greet opportunities right behind Cody Rhodes and before CM Punk. Take that, CM Punk. For SummerSlam 2024 weekend, there were photo opportunities with 11 wrestlers, and she was the first to sell out before CM Punk. Cody didn't participate in that event. Does Rhea not come up as high as a draw in your analyses because of Nielsen quarter hour performance and or WWE shop rankings? Thanks for your input. And by the way, another chance to plug up Patreon. We'll have a merchandise report coming up in the next couple days. I did look at everything year to date. The good thing about getting these questions and asking them in advance is that if they do require some research and some data to be dug up, I can spend a few minutes doing that. Rhea Ripley is not in the top 10 of my WWE shop estimated rankings based on how the items are appearing in the best sellers lists. So she is not in the top 10, although we have seen months where some of her items have ranked very highly. But there are at least 10 others who are, according to where the items lie, assuming that these rankings are honest on the bestseller pages. Not in the top 10 doesn't mean she's not a fairly strong merchandise draw, but not in the top 10 as far as our methodology can determine. That being said, Juan did provide a link to the SummerSlam meet and greet screen where it is apparent that Rhea Ripley was sold out, as well as Jey Uso. Something I would keep in mind here is that I don't know what the quantities are here, but, you know, it's probably dependent on how much time the given talent is spending at the meet and greet. So that's an issue to keep in mind. Nonetheless, if I look at quarter hours, so what I did here was I looked at Raw, which is the show that she's primarily on, right? I don't know if she's hardly ever on SmackDown. So what I did here, and this is, if this is not year to date, it's at least since mid-February, and I just said, and I punched into my description column of what's in the quarter hours, and I said Ripley, and these are all the quarter hours that she has appeared in, or at least that we have labeled as containing Ripley, presumably Rhea Ripley, and you can partially read these in a lot of cases, and one of my ways to try to determine whether or not there was a genuine positive effect on the Quarter Hour because of the content is, should I explain the math? Basically, we say, okay, here's the 90-day average of how much this given Quarter Hour grows or loses viewers. And we're going to focus on the demo only just to make this easy. And I say, okay, here's how we expect this Quarter Hour to perform in terms of how many viewers it gains or loses. This is the 90-day average, and that's represented, if you're watching a video, in this column that I'm maybe moving the mouse over, this column right here. This is how we expect it to perform. And then I say, okay, if you overperformed this column, this value, by 5 percentage points or greater, you get lit up green. And maybe the reason why it did better than we expected it to is because of the content. And we do see a number of cases of Quarter Hours being lit up green because they performed better than we would have predicted based on the 90-day moving average of what we expect this Quarter Hour, this point in the show, to do. And I believe this conditional format is also taking into account the ads. To get really sidetracked here, I've been working on a Python script that might make a prediction about what a given Quarter Hour is going to do based on the time segments, the 15 minutes, is it 8 o'clock to 8:15? Is it 9 o'clock to 9:15? Is it 9:15 to 9:30, et cetera? And the number and kind of ads, whether we're talking about full screen ads or whether we're talking about picture in picture ads, right? That doesn't apply to here, but just to tell you what I've been doing. Anyway, point being, yeah, we do see a lot of cases here where Rhea Ripley is on the screen. And this Quarter Hour grew viewers more than we expected it to. And we do this because, you know, we try to apply this kind of methodology because it just happens to be the case that, you know, the audience tends to grow at 9 o'clock to 9:15 in a lot of cases. Sometimes it's because you're putting a leadoff hitter in a leadoff hitter slot. But maybe there's other factors. I'm sure there's other factors, including people being done watching whatever they were watching at 8:59 and they're flipping the channel. In any case, we see in this, I don't know, there's a couple dozen examples here, and we see 9 cases where I would say we have a suspected case of positive performance. And I would say that's a pretty good hit ratio. I think she affects, and I think Judgment Day in general has been a rating success. Judgment Day has been a rating success. Yeah, whether you like it or not, people are... It's doing well in the Quarter Hours, I would say. And even recently as this past Monday, where we have whatever this was, this 8:30 segment that she was in. Okay. And then we have a question from Adam. Hi, Brandon. Is AEW receiving any site fees for their Grand Slam event in Australia this February? Curious if site fees may have played a role in their selection process for that event. And Adam, I'm right there with you in terms of, I have the same question. I have the same curiosity. The answer is, I don't know. I could ask people at AEW and I'm sure they're not going to tell me. I think it's, if there is any event for AEW right now that's getting a site fee or other significant incentive, I guess it's this one. I guess we could already say though, and not just guess, but we can say that AEW got a discount to run the esports arena in its Collision residency. There was a discount of a couple $1,000, something in that range. The report is out there. You can check it for yourself. I don't have any reason to believe yet that AEW is getting any kind of incentive or site fee for All In, because I have made a number of records requests, and I will check this now while I'm rambling here. I have sent records requests to the governor, my friend Greg Abbott. I've sent a records request to the city of Arlington, not just about the path to All In this year, but next year's All In itself. And as I scroll off screen here, the 2025 City of Arlington, they told me that they are still looking into whether there are any records responsive to my request. So it's possible that there's something there. The governor, though, said we don't have any records which tells me if the government doesn't have any records related to this, that means it's unlikely they're using the event trust program, which I will put on the screen here. Where's the event trust program, Texas? Yeah, the event trust funds program in Texas, which is what has been used to attract a number of WWE events. That's, you can read all about it on the governor's website and in the Texas Economic Development and Tourism page on the governor's website. Head on over to Greg Abbott's homepage and you can read all about it and how it kind of works. And you can see examples of where it's been used, including WrestleMania 38. It was also used for WrestleMania 32. It was also used for Royal Rumble 2023. Now we know is being used for All In. Doesn't look like it, which means doesn't mean there isn't a site fee, but makes it less likely. We'll see. We'll see what Arlington, what kind of records Arlington will produce here. But anyway, that's not your question. Your question is about Grand Slam. Maybe we will. I tell you, I have not sent a records request yet. We have sent a records request most recently about WWE and UFC. It's difficult to send records requests in Australia because they require you to have an address, but we have obtained a friendly address in Australia, and we will eventually send a records request for this. If not before the event, then after the event. By the time the event is done, you're even more likely. I have some uncertainty whether we're going to be able to get something before the event. They also ask you to send money in for your request in Australia. So we will try. I'm not that confident that there's a site fee here, though. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, though. Next question from Andrew. He says, "Hi, Brandon, do you think it would make sense to have a kayfabe and to have kayfabe and non-kayfabe portions of wrestling press conferences? They could use the first half for in-character storyline gubbins." I had to look this word up, gubbins. I figured, you know, maybe this is like some Gen Z terminology that I'm not hip to. But gubbins is apparently I may be mispronouncing it. Shame on me if I am. Gubbins is apparently, I forget now. If we look at the Merriam-Webster dictionary, it's any bits and pieces, scraps, too, British, gadgets and gadgetry. For example, the gubbins for changing a tire. You learn new words every day here on WrestleNomics. In any case, I digress. They could use the first half for in-character storyline gubbins and the second for serious discussion with a delineated break in between. If not, maybe they could install a big neon kayfabe sign like those old TV show applause prompts, because the uncertainty, I believe, leans the questions towards softballs. Kind regards. I think they are kind of already doing this. If you look at how WWE has changed from just doing a press conference to a post show, which I think is the right move in that, so that they're not putting everybody who would be in the press conference in the previous format in the press conference. They are putting some people into an interview with one of their interviewers, right, with Jackie Redmond or something, or they're putting somebody at the desk, so that if you just want somebody to answer kayfabe questions and to have sort of a promo moment or something like that, you can do that. And you can put other talent who maybe are more suited, or it's more fitting in this situation to put them before the press to be asked non-kayfabe questions. So I think that's already kind of happening. Maybe it will be more, the questions will be more distinctly divided that way, or there'll be more non-kayfabe questions being asked because of that format. I mean, you can judge for yourself whether that's happening or not, but I think that's the right approach, is to let's just have some people do in-character responses in our controlled situation, but then put others in front of the press. That being said, we've got, a press that is largely populated by influencers and by people who are not really that determined to do the kind of journalism that I think it would be better suited for the wrestling industry to have for the betterment of the environment and of driving for transparency. So I think we're going to continue to get people applauding I think we're going to continue to get softball questions, and I don't think softball questions in every case are a bad thing. And for most talent, like, I don't think they need to be, you know, they need to be asked the most scrutinizing, difficult questions. I think the most serious questions are for Polivec or for any other executive they might choose to put up there. So hopefully it gets better. I don't have much hope, though. Now to Pete in Texas. I was wondering if you ever found out WBD's cut or piece of AEW. Do you expect it to increase? And what does that mean for the deal and the PPV money? There's two questions here, so let's stop there, and we'll take the second question in a moment. Have I ever found out what WBD's cut or piece of AEW is? And what Pete in Texas, I'm sure, is referring to there is that I strongly believe WBD owns a minority stake in AEW. Tony Khan was asked this directly about a year ago, and he gave a very Tony Khan answer. I don't know that I have the audio offhand, but he basically answered it in a way that did not encourage any doubt that WBD has a minority interest. And he made clear that Tony Khan has all the voting power. He at least has controlling voting power. But I strongly believe WBD has a minority ownership share in AEW, which may weigh heavily. We don't talk about this enough, which may weigh heavily into how WBD negotiates with AEW. This could be totally off, but maybe it is in WBD's interest to let AEW go out of the exclusive window so that AEW can entertain offers from other potential partners, which will therefore increase the media rights value, or at least fully realize whatever the media rights value for AEW content is, which if they attract a bid that is so strong that it's a bid that WBD chooses not to match, in essence, that still may benefit WBD because AEW would be more economically valuable in that event where their media rights are even more expensive, even though WBD does not retain them as a partner in that hypothetical scenario. So in the end, what I'm saying is that may be a reason why these negotiations have gone on for so long. And I could be totally wrong here, right? I don't have a high level of confidence in this, but this seems like a possibility that I can't rule out. And maybe a reason, as these things tend to be complicated more than I can foresee. A reason why it may be taking so long to finalize this deal is because it is in WBD's interest to allow AEW to fully explore the value of its media rights fees. I don't know, though. Maybe WBD is so strapped for cash that it's more important to them to save money and make sure that they don't pay more for these rights. I don't know. I don't know what percentage we're talking about. I don't have any sense of that in terms of ownership percentage. Do you expect it to increase? And what does that mean for the deal? I think there could be. I don't see any reason why there couldn't be some sort of trade for additional shares in AEW as part of a new deal where WBD owns maybe a little bit more and gives AEW a little bit more of a rights fee because of that. Pete's second question. Also, would AEW be better served to be on a different network? There are all kinds of things going on with WBD, and none of them seem positive. Would it be better for AEW to be on a different network? Of course it would. It would be better for AEW to be on Netflix and ABC. Yes, they're the maximum distribution. The essence of the question, though, is AEW at any kind of strong risk because of WBD's stock problems, financial problems? Let's look at WBD stock and put that on the screen here and say year to date. Bah, it's red as can be. It's down 33% year to date. That said, though, TNT and TBS aren't going anywhere. The Max streaming service, HBO, all that stuff isn't going anywhere. Maybe in the next year or two or three, some of these WBD properties get sold and get put into different media companies like Comcast or probably not Disney, but you could definitely see WBD being merged with another company such as NBC Universal or Comcast, or who knows what's happening with Paramount. But as these are declining assets, and this is this company in particular that is not very diversified outside of its traditional TV networks and its production studios. It doesn't have a telecom company as a parent like NBCU does in the form of Comcast. It doesn't have as strong of a theme parks business as Disney does. So we could see some of these networks get scooped up by other other players with more cash. That being said, is it a big thing for, is it a risk for AEW to be on this network? Not really. I think you're still okay. You're on a major cable network still. Yeah, you're going to be on a TNT that doesn't have NBA in a couple years. And that's not a good thing. But it may also make that network want to hold on to you a little bit tighter and maybe pay you a few dollars more. So it's not like TNT or TBS are going to disappear, though. As long as they are among the most distributed cable networks in the United States, which they are, which I have no reason to think they won't be, there are plenty of networks that are highly distributed that don't have sports, and WBD owns a lot of them. So I think they're okay as far as that goes. Of course, you always want to be on the strongest network possible, and that's why Netflix and I guess like a broadcast network like ABC or NBC would be ideal. But I think they will be okay. This is more of like, what is the nature of the media industry? What is the nature of the media rights market? Those are the more immediate questions for AEW's outlook. And what's the ranking of its programming?
Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, how's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's HIMS.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. HIMS.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
And now Clark, he asks, what do you feel is the greatest impediment to AEW renewing their rights, their media rights, and do you think they are currently negotiating with other potential media partners? I don't have a strong sense. I think I would be surprised if there are real serious other interested bidders. I could see some moderate, you know, mild bidders. I think there were other bidders, say, for WWE's content who did not get it, maybe in the form of Amazon or something like that. And I could see, I don't know, maybe Amazon making a light bid, making a mild bid or something like that. I don't know if Fox is or, you know, or has. I could see that happening, but I don't see, like, strong bids that are going to dramatically run up the price. But hopefully they'll announce a deal soon. Tomorrow's Labor Day, and I've heard that we have to pull the alarm on Labor Day about these rights. So hopefully we get an announcement soon. Hopefully we learn what the actual average annual value of those rights are. But at this point, I would be mildly surprised if there is strong interest from other bidders. But somebody can tell me if I'm wrong. Stephen A. Smith, says, hey, Brandon, I was wondering if you had a sense of how Raw ratings will be distributed once it goes to Netflix in 2025. I can't imagine we will get weekly ratings released from Netflix/WWE, knowing how secretive Netflix is with ratings/viewership of their content. I can imagine an occasional press release or maybe the debut episode or high viewership here and there. How will this affect your show reports/data? There's more here, but I'll answer that first. I don't know. Netflix is going to have an NFL game on Christmas, I think, too. And I think and the NFL will continue to always have Nielsen measure its game viewership in the traditional manner. WWE, though, I don't know. Netflix, every quarter, I believe, does make its data public. You can find that, but what they publish is not something that's easily reconcilable with what we are familiar with, which I will call average minute. What's AMA? I forget. Anyway, we're looking at the minute average of a telecast when we say Raw was watched by 1.7 million people. That's on an average minute of the entire telecast. I have emailed Netflix weeks ago and asked them if ask them if Nielsen is going to measure this in any sort of traditional way. I did not hear back, unsurprisingly. If they don't, now if January comes and there's no Nielsen measurement on Raw's TV ratings, we will continue to do show reports, just not including TV ratings. We'll still put the reason why we're not going to have estimated tickets distributed from WrestleTix. We'll have the YouTube chart in there. We'll have the cage match chart in there on people's response to the show. I'm not going to try to use Google Trends to extrapolate on what the viewership was, but I hope so. And ultimately, it comes down to, like, how are advertisers? And this is not an answer that I know. It's not a question I know the answer to. Is that how are advertisers going to be sold on advertising if they don't have a currency with which to buy against? Is Netflix just going to give them first-party information? Ideally, the reason why Nielsen exists is because we have third-party, independent, at least more independent data that advertisers can trust, or trust more than first-party data to buy to consider when they're buying their advertising. How is Netflix going to have a robust ad business, which has only just begun to grow, if they don't have a strong independent data source measuring their telecast viewership. So that's my argument and hope that there will be there will eventually be Nielsen measurement on this. We'll see. Because we have seen it on Prime Video telecasts of the NFL, on the Peacock telecasts of NFL games. Hopefully this will extend to measuring live broadcasts of other things like Raw. Hopefully. Steven goes on, do you think that this lack of granular ratings for Raw was a strategic move by WWE? Taking the leap to streaming is a big move, but it also seems like they won't get the level of scrutiny with their ratings that we tend to see when things like Monday Night Football counter-program them. Thanks. I don't think that, if this is what you're asking, is that I don't think like part of the reason why Raw is moving to Netflix is so there won't be ratings reports anymore. If that was such a concern, we here at WrestleNomics would have many, many more subscribers than we do, I think. So I don't think that it's a factor weighing into WWE's choice to make a deal with Netflix to avoid the disclosure of their TV ratings, which may end up getting disclosed anyway. We'll see at some point, if not immediately upon their move. I think the big advantage would be on Netflix is Netflix's enormous reach, and maybe the other wheels in the business world that they can pull for WWE to help them with their other businesses, including their viewership of Raw and of WWE content on Netflix in markets throughout the world. Netflix has enormous reach that no other streaming service is going to come close to. Netflix is in about the same number of homes as the top cable networks. And the key thing to consider on top of that is that Netflix is stable and maybe growing that coverage. And cable is declining in that coverage. And Netflix is going to exceed the top cable networks in terms of its household coverage if it hasn't already. So you want to be there. It's better than being on Amazon Prime Video. It's better than being on Hulu. It's better than being on Max. It's better than being on Tubi. It's better than being on Disney Plus, etc. It's better than being on Peacock. So it's strong coverage. And it may be adding to the number of unique households that have access to live WWE content. So those are some of the arguments in favor, including a sufficient amount of money. Patrick asks, behind the scenes, how concerned do you think AEW officials are about the week-over-week and year-over-year decline of viewership and live attendance? A complicated question, more than it may seem. I think Tony Khan is exceptionally focused on week-to-week ratings, more so than he should be. That's the impression that I have. But I don't think that they're that concerned, or they shouldn't be that concerned about. I think they should be concerned about their TV ratings decline in the sense that it is reflective of the loss in popularity of their product. And they should be thinking a great deal about how to address that. I don't have a great deal of confidence that they are prepared to do so, but they should be paying a great deal of attention to that. Year-over-year declines in viewership are reflective of the loss of popularity. But as we pointed out here, this is where I have the slide I want to look at again, is that this ranking is fairly stable. I know we're only looking at a few months here, but in a slightly different slicing of the data that we don't have as up-to-date as that slide, we can see that Dynamite, in terms of its average cable original broadcast primetime daily P1849 rank, where it's ranking among other programming generally on its day in the demo, even including broadcast into that frame, you see over the broad course of time, an improving and at worst stable ranking. And if we're looking at just cable and excluding broadcast, we see it ranking in the top five on average, like always. And again, if we look at this, now this is just primetime, and this is excluding stuff outside of primetime, which isn't that much. It's pretty similar. This ranking is stable. Even though, and you go back and listen to some WrestleNomics Radio episodes from 5-6 years ago, you hear us, I think, say the same thing, or at least we should have, about WWE content. Yes, that viewership of WWE content at the time in the late 2010s was declining, and that was reflective. That decline was so severe, it was reflective of a decline in popularity alongside other consumer metrics that were also in decline, but its ranking was still strong. And in a TV environment where TV programs are kind of all losing their viewership, you still rank highly, you're still among the most valuable products. Now, it would be better if your viewership was higher and we could make more money on the ads we sell against your program because your audience was larger. But while you rank highly, you're going to be a pretty important program for a network to have. So are they concerned about the week-to-week ratings? I think Tony probably does and is, and maybe overanalyzes them. Yet on the other hand, I think he's also confident in the value of AEW as a media property. And I think he should be, and I think WBD should be, because Dynamite ranks pretty highly and Collision and Rampage probably outperform what would be in their place, such as rerun theatrical releases and sitcoms. So it's good supplemental programming to Dynamite. And maybe there's a value that Max would like to have in terms of the pay-per-views. I don't know. Live attendance, I think, is an even clearer story about the decline in popularity. And I think there we have a more concerning story, a macro story about, is this the decline of TNA all over again? Is this a company that right now has strong media rights value? Is this a company over the lifetime of its next TV deal that maybe it's 5 years or something like that, that is at risk of falling out of that ranking because of some more insidious problem with the content or with the company? I think that's, if AEW was a publicly traded company, that is a concern that I think should be thought about. That I don't think AEW is especially ready to deal with, because it mostly comes down to leadership. I think we have more questions along these lines. I could expand on those thoughts, but maybe I will in a moment. Billy P asks, hi, Brandon. Recently, you talked about AEW as a challenger brand and gave the examples of Uber and Airbnb. But I noticed Tony Khan usually gives the examples of Pepsi and Burger King. In those two cases, they are both financially strong and successful brands in their own right, but not the top brand of Coke or McDonald's. Uber and Airbnb are complete market disruptors of an entire industry, but it's hard to point to one market-leading company they are a challenger brand to. They disrupt all taxi services and all hotels, but aren't a strong second to any one particular hotel or taxi company. Do you think his, Tony's examples versus yours, points to the type of challenger brand Tony Khan sees AEW as? Thanks. It's a good question. As one says when they are asked a challenging question at a press conference. yes, this is, if all questions and all responses on social media were as thoughtful as this, I would read them more often. This is a good point. This is a discussion that I had several weeks ago, I think, about how different Airbnb is versus hotel brands generally, and how different and disruptive Airbnb and Uber is to the taxi industry. But it's a good point you raise here, in that there's not like one dominant hotel brand. There are a number of established hotel brands. It's not like there's one. I couldn't even name, I don't know, Liberty Cab or something. There isn't one dominant taxi cab or car transportation company. There are a number of them that were disrupted, and were disrupted harnessing new media, harnessing the smartphone, basically. So do you think his examples versus yours points to the type of challenger brand Tony Khan sees AEW as? So it does. I think this is another case where I would point to wrestling being a weird business. That's because I'm tempted to start thinking about sports and say, well, is there a challenger brand to the NFL? You know, we have the UFL out there now. I wouldn't call it a challenger brand. UFC, we could say, well, there's PFL, there's Bellator. I'm not sure that either of those companies are really challengers. Although you have Dana White saying that they're charity organizations. But I think PFL just made a new deal with ESPN, right? In any case, I don't understand the business well enough to say a lot more about it. But I suppose in Tony's comparison, he's saying, look, there's a McDonald's, there's a Coca-Cola, that dominates these industries. But you can enter that market with the right combination of qualities and still carve out a strong, sustainable, profitable business in the form of Pepsi, Burger King. And they're not necessarily that different, are they? Maybe I just don't know enough about the fast food industry and the soft drink industry to say, what are the big differences between Burger King and McDonald's? They seem pretty similar on the exterior to me. They have different logos. They have slightly different menus. They're quite similar. Pepsi and Coca-Cola, they're both serving cola, and you know, they both have their offshoots of lemon lime soft drink and Sprite and 7-Up, right? They have different commercials. They have different logos. Maybe they have different creative in their advertising. Maybe they're trying to represent different things through their brand. But they're not that different, are they? And not yet, their lack of apparent difference to a lay person like me, nonetheless. I mean, I haven't looked at their finances. I think they're publicly traded companies. But I would expect to find that Burger King, which I think is a component of Yum, probably quite profitable. Pepsi, probably quite profitable. And clearly been around for decades and sustainable. So, and that could be the case with AEW too, in that even though it may be quite like WWE in terms of using a lot of the staples that Vince McMahon started to use in the late 90s, early 2000s that had never been a part of pro wrestling before that point, which have been, you know, indoctrinated and absorbed and internalized into AEW. Even though AEW is internalizing a lot of those things and being quite like WWE in a lot of ways, they could still have a highly ranked flagship program called Dynamite that could attract hundreds of millions of dollars in domestic media rights value that could make them profitable. That is possible. As long as popularity doesn't continue to decline a lot more, and maybe it'll plateau at some point. But the direction currently is down to the right. And as long as that is the direction, there is a risk that this does fall out of being in the top five and does maybe eventually fall out of being a strong media rights brand. Maybe. We saw it with TNA before the media rights market really grew even more, and you know, maybe TNA could be occupying the spot that AEW currently inhabits. And I would suggest, you know, what will stabilize or improve AEW's popularity and therefore its TV ratings or attendances? There are exactly 10 things that I think will lead to that, and I will now list them. It's leadership, 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 and leadership. And I think that was, I'm emboldened in that view based on what happened around Vince and how WWE's popularity was down to the right with some offsetting factors interceding in the form of media distribution to temporarily stabilize that descent in the form of the WWE Network in 2014, in the form of Peacock in 2021. But because of, I think, Vince McMahon's leadership, and in particular his effect on creative and his evaluation of talent, WWE was in a multi-year descent, not severe enough to negatively impact their media rights value to prevent it from growing. So when Vince was removed from power and creative was taken out of his hands, we've seen this tremendous up and to the right trajectory as WWE has recovered from years of its popularity being on the downfall. I think AEW will become better or not by, in part, maybe being different. What is the difference between WWE and AEW? I don't know if Tony can strongly answer that question. I know why he likes AEW. He likes it because he thinks it's great and he's in charge and he's really into the storylines that he's booking. But I don't know that he has an answer to why the wrestling fan who has limited time and limited money should recognize AEW as not better in somebody's subjective opinion, but substantively, objectively different. And to tie this to something that Tony Khan would be familiar with, Tony will talk quite a bit about ECW and his fandom of ECW in the 90s. And I can tell you the reason why Tony and a lot of people were attracted to ECW and they remember ECW so fondly is not because they were great storylines and great wrestlers and great matches. It's because it was different. There are some differences that AEW shows that are different from WWE, but I think it could be a lot more. I think AEW should be thinking about that, and I don't think that they're in a place to really address that, because I think AEW is sort of beholden to cooperating with talent and unable at times to overcome politics, the whims of talent, personal affinities for talent for the sake of stabilizing or maybe even growing the audience. Troy C., we only have a couple more left here. Troy C., have you ever seen a wrestling company's business dissected at the level of AEW? Strictly speaking, no, probably not. What do you think? I think that's largely a result of the media environment within which, and I mean both from a technology and an information environment where everybody can talk to their phone and have a podcast and have a YouTube channel and create a ridiculous thumbnail. So probably not, no. And it does, and it's a more tenuous. Is AEW going to continue to exist? It probably, well, very likely will. What do you think causes AEW to draw well on pay-per-view versus Dynamite or Collision? Thanks, I'll hang up and listen. And I guess what Troy is talking about here is that pay-per-view is maybe holding up better than TV ratings, which we can kind of see here, all in, according to The Observer, doing somewhere between two numbers that have a median of 170,000 buys, which would be down about 15% from the prior year. We have Double or Nothing down 4% from the prior year. We have Forbidden Door down 14% from the prior year. We have Revolution with Sting's retirement up 38%. So more people should retire is the lesson I learned there. But if we compare the decline in pay-per-view, which I'd have to do a weighted average here, more on weighted averages later, pay-per-view is maybe declining less severely than TV ratings. And I say that that's, you know, think of a funnel. Think of a funnel in that you have a big audience up at the top. You have a wide space up at the top. And then as you go further down to the funnel, you have a smaller audience. And those are your more hardcore audience. And let's not think about hardcore in terms of the people who tweet and post on Cage Match and read wrestling news, but hardcore in terms of hard to break. And so the people that are the smaller audience, which is the pay-per-view audience, smaller by its nature than the television audience, they're harder to break. They're more willing to spend $50 to watch pay-per-view or $25 if they're using a VPN, and they're going to stick around more easily. They're going to be harder to turn away. I think that just makes sort of logical economic sense. Lavi M., from the Business of Business podcast, he asks, "Hi, Brandon, why does AEW continue to book many 10 to 20,000 sized arenas for TV when they are aware that the actual audience is often under 5,000? Is there a better perception for TV purposes to use a venue that everyone has heard of?" I don't know if it matters, like in terms of TV purposes, in terms of the venue being recognizable, or if it's the TV production look is probably the bigger thing. I'm sure it's more expensive to run an NBA arena versus running a smaller, I don't know, college basketball size arena or something like that. To some extent, they have addressed this in terms of the Collision residency in Arlington. Maybe there will be more of that. I'm sure that would save them on expense and get them a little closer to profitability on an annual basis if they did more of that. I can't tell you why they continue. I mean, in the case of Champaign, Illinois, book, you know, a building that I don't know how, I imagine that holds 10,000 or something like that, and they put 2,000 in it. I'm sure that's expensive. We did see, you know, in WWE's weaker period in the 2010s, like they would run house shows at Rocket. I remember going to a house show in Cleveland, Rocket Mortgage Arena, with a couple thousand people there, and that's where like the Cleveland Cavaliers would play basketball. But just tons of empty space there. So I don't know if there's a relationship maybe with the venue there that it's good to hold on to, even though you've got way more space than you need. Frazier asks, "Hi, Brandon, quick question. With the amendment to Nielsen for the time of the overrun, how much of a difference is that making in the overrun quarter hour? Is it possible it went from a 0.22 up to a 0.25. Thanks in advance for your answer. So this gives us an opportunity to do weighted averages. Of course, Fraser is asking about the correction, the Nielsen correction to the Diamond rating, which went from being 691,000 viewers on this past Wednesday to being 697 after the correction, because WBD, I think, assigned Dynamite as being 129 minutes versus 126 minutes. So this gives us an opportunity to say, okay, what was the overrun really then? And you can do a weighted average and come up with math to say, well, the overrun must have been about, there's a range in which this will fit, but must have been about 715,000 viewers in that overrun, in that 6 minute overrun, and about 320,000 viewers in the demo. So that fits with what the whole episode averages were. And if we look at the overrun, which did not end at 809, but ended at did not end at 1009, but ended at 1006, then we do have the audience growing rather than losing in that overrun, and being up to like 715,000 viewers or something like that, and being up to 320. So if, as a demo, 320 divided by the new Nielsen estimate of 1340.9 would be 0.24. Is that what you said? 0.25, no, 0.24 is what that 6 minute overrun would be, which was the Bryan Danielson and Jack Perry live angle. If you wish to ascribe meaning to that. And finally, Delmar getting his question in late. Hi, Brandon. I'm curious, but how big do you think the drop from Fox to USA Network will be for SmackDown? I've seen many outlets gauge it with preempted FS1 numbers and others with what Raw on USA is doing. It will do lower than Raw, right? Because Friday's a harder night to draw viewership than Monday. But I think it'll do better than FS1. Why do I think it'll do better than FS1? It's definitely not going to do as well as it does on Fox with a higher reach. But the FS1 numbers were what? If we pull the spreadsheet over here, and we look at just the FS1 numbers, go to the, let's see here, clear FS1, and we are looking at, so it did most recently, this was on the day after Thanksgiving, so I would dismiss that, but they did at their best last year do 1.1, 1.2 million viewers. I think it'll do better than that because it's USA Network, and USA Network is a stronger network than FS1, and it's not a preemption. I think maybe there's still some preemption effect in these numbers. Not to mention, just as I'm sure we'll see with NXT, we will see a really hyped up debut on the new network. That will be the biggest rating that this show does, perhaps in the entire run. Not because people tuned in and they decided they didn't like the show, but because there'll be a tremendous incentive on both the part of the network and on the part of WWE to load this show up with things that people want to see and promote it really strongly so that the behavior is learned to watch it on the new network. So I would not judge the first episode or the second episode as any sort of normal level, but we'll see what happens here. It'll do lower than Raw, which is doing like 1.6, 1.7, right? So I would say 1.4, 1.5 on Friday on USA Network, SmackDown, something like that. Something like that. Is that what Raw is doing? 1.8 almost, 1.6, 1.9. It'll do like 1.5, maybe something like that. Okay. And is that the last one? And questions. Maybe we'll do more of this. You're going to have to subscribe, though, to listen next week, remember. But you can, I guess I'll accept anybody's questions. We'll see. You're going to have to subscribe, though, to get an answer to your question. You can email it. Only email it. Okay? Don't send me a letter. Don't dare send me a letter. Don't DM me it. Send it to Brandon at WrestleNomics.com in email form, and I'll be able to organize it better that way. So that's it. Paul and Thurston will be back at 1 p.m., a special new start time. We've got to load up some sort of draw. We're going to have to book some big superstars and some big matches this coming Wednesday for Paul and Thurston starting at 1 p.m. Eastern instead of 3 p.m. Eastern if you watch it or listen to it live. So that will be coming on all post-wrestling and all WrestleNomics platforms, free for everyone as always. And that's all. Again, patreon.com/WrestleNomics if you would like to subscribe. Talk to you next time.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.